Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
Four Democratic candidates are running to challenge incumbent Republican Senator Joni Ernst. In the third part of a four-part series, let's go in-depth with Kimberly Graham. So Kimberly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a mom, and for the last 20 years, I've been an attorney for abused or neglected kids and for parents here in Iowa in juvenile court. And my dad was one of 15 siblings from a poor family here in central Iowa. My mom was a teenage mom who dropped out of high school to have me. All my parents and my grandfather and my son's father are all or were union workers. I was a union flight attendant for 13 years while I was working my way through college and law school. I was born at the Camp Pendleton Marine Corps base. My dad was in the Marines when I was born, and I've lived in Indianola. I lived in Indianola for about 24, 25 years, which is the longest I've ever lived anywhere in my life. And that's where we raised our son. And now I live on the south side of Des Moines, a little bit closer to work.
Well, what made you want to go into that part of law, of helping children?
Well, I think we all have particular gifts or callings or things that we kind of that draw our attention more than other things. And I remember being a little girl and being able to order those books from the Scholastic Book Order forms at school. And I used to always order these books like, you know, I had this one book that was called I Walked with Martin Luther King Jr. And it was all about, you know, on a child level about the civil rights movement. And I ordered another book about Rosa Parks. And I just from a young age was attracted to learning about social justice issues and racial justice issues. I remember being very perplexed when I was a little girl because thankfully, personally, was kind of oblivious to those issues as a young girl, I guess as a lot of little kids are. And I remember just feeling so angry and sad at reading about these things when I first discovering them. I mean, I still remember being so upset. How can human beings treat each other this way? And so I guess I've just always had a strong sense of of social justice causes and of helping people, lifting people up, trying to see that everybody has an opportunity to live a life of health and dignity. And so going to law school was something I did because I wanted to have a kind of a career where I could help people that needed help. And so that's how I ended up doing what I do.
More in depth after this.
Continued my conversation with Democratic Senate candidate Kimberly Graham. And why are you running for Senate?
Well, there's three main reasons. One was the 2016 election. Like a lot of people, especially like a lot of women, I was very upset by the results of that election. I started to realize that if regular working people don't step up and run for office, we get what we get. I also have a 20-year-old son. That's reason number two. I was looking around and watching the world around us, from the climate crisis to our ridiculous, unsustainable healthcare system to the way that we invest or don't invest in children and families in this country. And I don't want that to be his future, any of the trajectories that we're on right now. So I'm running for my son. Like a lot of people, I would do anything to help my son. And I hope that I can do that by becoming a U.S. Senator, among other ways. And the last reason is what I've done for the last 20 years. In the last 20 years, I've mostly represented people in poverty. And I see, you know, what goes on. I spend the majority of my work with children and people living in poverty, so it's pretty clear to me what they need to lead decent lives in the wealthiest nation on earth. And I hope that by getting to the United States Senate, I can be a voice of authenticity and experience, because that's been the work I've done for the last 20 years. I think I'm better able to speak to that than a lot of others.
Well, where does one begin? Where does one start to make people's lives better by being a senator?
Well, there's several things on different levels, and I think you have to keep all the plates spinning as much as you can. I think one of the most basic fundamental things is you have to be available to people and you have to listen to people. It sounds so ridiculous. Well, of course you have to listen when you're somebody's representative, but it appears to me most representatives, frankly, don't. They don't listen to the people that they're representing. Not really. And for example, if you are looking at a piece of legislation in front of you, and it's going to affect, mothers who receive WIC, you know, who receive assistance for children, it would seem logical to me to seek out and reach out and talk to mothers who are receiving aid for children, for their children, and talk to them about what they think of any proposed legislation. I don't really think that very much legislation gets passed after careful consultation with the people that it's going to affect the most. And that's one way that I would be able to hopefully put forward the things that actually will make people's lives better, is by simply listening to them. There's policies, of course, that would immediately lift a lot of people out of poverty. The most, you know, the lowest hanging fruit, the one that we can look at and point to, especially right now today with the pandemic, with COVID-19, is our healthcare system. It is not sustainable. It's far too expensive. And we have some of the worst health outcomes, e.g. life expectancies, of any developed nation. So if we simply went to a universal single-payer healthcare system where every single person had healthcare as a fundamental human right, simply as a result of living in the United States of America, we would not be seeing the number of deaths that we are seeing from this illness, because a lot of these deaths are the result of pre-existing conditions that could be better managed if people had better access to healthcare. And we're seeing disproportionate numbers in the Latino community here in Iowa and in the African-American community here and all over the country. So if we simply did that, people could stop paying on average $12,000 a year for their medical insurance and for their co-pays, deductibles, and all of that. The average family would pay far, far less, substantially less, and get more. It covers a lot more. That would put so much more money into people's pockets every month, and it would just simply make us a healthier nation, literally a healthier nation.
More in depth after this.
Continued my conversation with Democratic Senate candidate Kimberly Graham. Well, now let's hope that the COVID-19 sort of fades into the background. Okay. We've got some work to do with the economy. What would you do as a senator?
Right. Well, for so long as we are dealing with COVID-19, I believe that we need to be stepping up our investments in regular working people, and we need to stop bailing out, you know, multinational corporations that frankly are not anywhere near a point where they even needed or need the bailouts. It was something in the neighborhood of $500 billion that went to large, large corporations in the stimulus package. Essentially, that stimulus package was a cover for funneling yet more money upward, you know, up to the people that frankly just don't need it. There are some really good corporations out there who pay their people well and treat their people well and pay them well. you know, there's a company, Shake Shack, that was in the news because they gave back the $10 million that they were given because they said, look, we can access other forms of capital. We don't need this money. But the mom and pop corner sundry in Indianola or Mishmash Bakery in Indianola probably doesn't need that money. And what I'm hearing from people all over Iowa is that by the time, by people, I mean owners of very small businesses, what I call micro businesses, is that by the time they went to apply for that PPP money to help their business stay afloat, it was gone. Well, no wonder, because we're funneling billions up to these corporations that can either, you know, make it through this crisis on their profits they've already got, or they can access capital from other sources. They should not have received this money that they did. And we also need to be paying and supporting individual people. I think Canada is doing something like $2,000 a month for 3 months for every adult. And other nations are doing similarly, where they're giving far more than the paltry $1,200, you know, that we that were tossed at us here in this country on a one-time payment at that, which, you know, might last most families a couple weeks if we're lucky.
Well, talk about our standing in the world and foreign affairs, diplomacy, your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so obviously we have some major, major work to do there. The last 3 years have just been a horrible tragedy for America's standing in the world in regards to the way our president has interacted or failed to interact with our allies, you know, has essentially flat out mocked our allies, alienated our allies. And we have a lot of repairing to do. The State Department has been gutted. That is going to have to be re-strengthened. Our diplomatic channels are going to need to be reinforced and strengthened. And we're just going to have to do a lot of rebuilding. I believe that America can and should be one of the kind of leaders of the globe in so many areas. But under this current administration, we have not become a leader, not in anything good. We've become a leader in, you know, relaxing environmental regulations to the point that we're now polluting our streams and rivers again, to the point that we, you know, our COVID-19 response has been so lackluster that we're one of the worst nations, you know, that experiencing this the worst. That didn't have to happen on the scale that it did. It certainly could have been mitigated. And on, basically every measure, things have gotten worse under this administration.
Now, we're a good portion of our economy is based upon agriculture. Why should people in agricultural industries support you?
I believe people in agricultural industries should support me because I, first, I'm going to listen to them. That's the most important thing. Secondly, because I recognize that especially our small and medium farmers, they really need help transitioning to a more sustainable farm operation. You know, it's no secret that a lot of our farmers are hanging on by their fingernails. A lot of them are basically running a nonprofit business right now, and they shouldn't be doing that. That shouldn't be the case. Farming shouldn't be a nonprofit. But because of the consolidation of giant, you know, agricultural companies, and our government has allowed that by failing to enforce antitrust legislation that would break up those monopolies, our farmers are doing their level best. I don't blame them a bit for trying to, you know, get bigger and bigger and trying to keep, you know, scraping by. But ultimately, that's not going to be sustainable. And what is sustainable is making a transition, which the federal government should help with, because we certainly provide plenty of supports to industrial agriculture, and again, big corporations that don't need it. what if we invested in the majority of us instead? What if we invested in small and medium farmers, help them transition to sustainable and regenerative agriculture, which is also a double win because that also helps clean up our water in Iowa. It helps keep our soil from eroding and ending up in the Gulf, you know, down in Mississippi, down the Mississippi. It helps prevent that dead zone from growing larger down in the Gulf. And ultimately, it's more profitable and sustainable for the farmer. And that is going to have a ripple effect, like throwing a rock in a pond. If we can make our farm operations more profitable and sustainable, that is also going to help grow rural communities, because those farm operations, you know, are the linchpins of a lot of these small towns.
In the last minute or two that we have left, address any issue that we didn't get to that you would like to, and then make your last best pitch why people should vote for you during the June 2nd primary.
Sure. So the thing I'd like to talk about just briefly is that one of the things I'm already working on, literally kind of penciling out a rough draft, and obviously it's not in a final iteration, but it's something called the American Child Care Act. You know, and this is obviously born out of my experience, not only as a mother, but as an attorney for kids for the last 20 years. And what that would entail is everything from paid leave for parents so that they can actually stay home with their infants or their adopted children for the first few months at least, and not lose their pay or their job. Every other developed nation does this. We should do it too. I had a client who had to go back to work after a week to be a waitress because otherwise she couldn't afford her rent. That shouldn't happen. It would also provide for universal child care, meaning everyone would be able to afford child care, and universal pre-K, and a lot of other things that we need to do to invest in children and families. I call these investments because they pay us back. When we make investments, we're going to save money down the road that we're not going to have to spend because we invested up front. So the last thing that I would just say is I think it's really important that people understand I am not a typical candidate. I never thought I would run for office. In a million years, I never thought I could. My parents are firmly working class people, union workers all their lives. I have been a person in poverty myself, putting myself through college and working two and three jobs at a time and not knowing how I'm going to pay my rent. I get it. And I still have massive student loan debt from putting myself through law school. I am the only candidate running for this seat who is not a millionaire. Fun fact. And I wish that were different because money is great to have. But I do believe that it's time for one of us to represent us. And I think I understand the struggles of everyday, regular working Iowans better than any of the other candidates. And I will work my butt off to make things better for the lives of regular Iowans.
Thanks to Kimberly Graham for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIA KRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIA KRLS.